Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Uh-oh, quarantine's getting to Chris Morales. He's losing track of where he's trying to say, I don't know, is what Chris Morales says in the middle of that intro. So what's going on, people? It's Monday, and it is sunny again today, so good day to go out for a walk, put your mask on, and have some fun. Ireland got to play a little golf this weekend.
Yeah.
How'd you play?
This is how I will answer that question. I birdied the last hole.
Oh, that's it?
That's all I'll say.
Good.
Before I exported money, if you know what I mean.
Well, remember that round based on that birdie. That birdie is the one that counts.
There you go.
Didn't that happen in the somewhere in the Jordan documentary where he would be losing a round but making side bets and making money on the side bets?
Yeah, I think he bets on which side of the car people will get out of. I mean, it's insane the amount of they play at a different level than I do.
Yeah, Craig Hodge is going to join us here in a minute, former teammate of Michael Jordan's. The documentary has been just fantastic, and as John said earlier, damn, we've only got one more week of it. It has been such a phenomenal viewing experience. If it was eligible for the Academy Awards, I would argue that, like the O.J. Simpson documentary, it would win the Academy Award. It's that good. It's that good. And I think most sports fans, period, are actually watching. Weirdly, the one guy who said he's not watching it is Daryl Morey, who was on last week. Daryl Morey said, not watching it.
Yeah, well, keep in mind, he's trying to, you know, and has been his whole life, trying to beat those guys. So, I mean.
Exactly.
I was surprised George Karl wasn't in the doc, weren't you?
Yeah, they didn't talk to George Karl, especially after that one story.
Right, because he's a North Carolina guy.
George Karl walked by him at dinner and didn't say anything.
Yeah, Kobe Karl is the coach of the Lakers G League team, and a neighbor of mine. And he Kobe's a great guy, and so I see Kobe a lot, but I don't think George would have objected. Maybe Michael didn't want him in there.
Who is
normally
the guy?
All those North Carolina guys are really tight.
And he may still hold a grudge over that particular thing. I mean, it looked like, who was the guy that lit him up for 37, the guy from the Bullets, and then Jordan, they had a home
and home. LeBradford
Smith. He told the story that when after he scored 37 in Washington, that LeBradford Smith said to Michael Jordan, "Nice game, Mike." And then Mike went off for like 36 in the first half of the next game. And afterwards, he told the story that LeBradford Smith never even said it. He was just looking for some little angle to get him amped up and to get him to that bitter, edgy sort of feeling that he had.
Okay, to take that a step further, remember the story about in those great battles between Sacramento and the Lakers, that supposedly Kobe got food poisoning from a cheeseburger?
Yes.
There's a lot of people that think that was motivation that was just created, that he just happened to, you know, people said, well, somebody at the hotel.
Somebody dosed his cheeseburger in Sacramento.
I've talked to people that think, you know, that was just regular food poisoning. It happens. And yet that story came out, and then Kobe lit him up for the rest of the series. Like,
yep.
He made up a false enemy, maybe.
Looking,
I don't know.
Looking for an edge. You know, we were talking about that. John, I want to hold this till after. You know what I was going to say? When I was younger, I think people that worked with me, including you, would have described me as tyrannical. Would you? I know Dave Singer.
Did. I think that I probably wouldn't use that word. I would say that you were erratic, but
erratic, angry, demanding.
Yeah, those are better than tyrannical.
And see, I'm glad I'm not that anymore.
Right.
I was that as long as it took to get on the map, and then I immediately became somebody different.
So it's interesting. Jordan, known as the ultimate winner as a player, is not known as that as an owner.
Yeah.
You know, he's kind of accepted the fact that his team is not going to compete for the title.
Ever.
And they never have.
Yeah, they never have.
You know, since he's been the owner, I don't think they've even made a conference final.
No. No, they have not.
So
he had one decent season as an owner where they were a couple of games over
500. And he's, you know, if he's not already, he's close to a billionaire because of the Air Jordan line. And you know,
I think
he's
actually over
owner.
A billionaire according to, you know, if you can believe celebrity net worth.
Right. Well, you asked me earlier in the show, is he happy?
Yeah.
Well,
he's worth $2.1 billion.
Yeah. I think he's tortured, but I think, I wouldn't mind being Michael Jordan.
Would you want to be tortured or would you want to be happy?
I don't know. I think that competitive athletes, and we've got one of them now, Craig Hodges.
Yeah.
And by
yeah.
the way, the way I met Craig was a shooting coach for us at the Lakers for a lot of the years where Phil was our coach. He would come in and teach guys how to shoot. But, Craig, those guys could never shoot as well as you did. You were one of the best shooters I've ever seen. How are you holding up, Craig?
Man, first of all, I want to thank you guys for the opportunity and thank God for being good and safe. And I want to hope that all your listeners are good, too, also, man, with all this craziness going on.
Yeah, we're good, and we appreciate you coming on and glad that you're good. We were talking about that but right before you came on, we were talking about how Michael was so demanding on teammates. You got to Chicago actually before he did. Was he always demanding, Craig, like when he was a rookie or a second-year player, or did that kind of develop when you guys started winning titles?
No, this is what's so heavy. When I came to the Bulls, MJ was already here.
Okay.
I came to the Bulls from Phoenix for Ed Neely in a trade.
In 88, that's right. And he was winning scoring titles, but he wasn't winning NBA titles.
Exactly. So when I came in, you know, the city was hollering about Michael needed help. And Jerry Colangelo, who grew up in Chicago Heights, my hometown, he was the son's general manager, and he traded me to the Bulls. And when I got here, it was cool right from the jump under Doug. And then when we went to Phil with Tex Winter, who was my college coach, a little rest of soul, that, you know, it was just like, something that it was a fish to water, man. It was perfect timing, too.
I know you're watching the documentary, Craig. How do you does the portrayal of Jordan match with the portrayal that you lived every day playing with him?
You know, it's wild to watch, man, in a lot of different ways for me to see it from a standpoint of knowing the intimacy of our teammates and what we were doing as a unit and the emotional roller coaster that it was during the Detroit years and trying to get through that and, you know, seeing, you know, when I got to the Bulls, I was a seasoned vet to a degree. I had more playoff experience, me and Bill Cartwright, than anybody on the team. So we were veterans. And I saw, you know, coming in, MJ had his entourage and his handlers. And I respected that. So it was a thing where a lot of it, you know, David Falk told you in the early part of the documentary that they made Michael into an individual athlete within a team sport, something that had never been done. And it was carried like that, off the court especially, but within the team concept, it was something totally different, man.
We're talking to Craig Hodges, who won titles in Chicago with Michael, both in 91 and 92. Craig, Michael Thompson, my broadcast partner, swears to me that if James Worthy didn't get hurt in the 91 finals, that the Lakers would have taken you guys out. And I said, Michael, the Bulls were 6-0 in the finals. Would you please put to rest his theory that a healthy James Worthy would have buried the Bulls? I'm a diehard Laker fan, but I think you guys were a runaway train.
And, you know, Michael's my boy, man. I love him to death, man. And the great success that his sons have had, you know, that's a great thing. But, you know, I think that the team that we had in 1991, I think we could have competed and won against any team that ever won a championship. So for him to say that, one of the things I will say, had the Lakers played more Eldon Campbell and Tony Smith, it might have been the series might have went longer. But I was glad that Dunleavy decided not to let those guys get as much run as they should have gotten.
You know, we see Michael pushing teammates during the documentary. Did he push you? Did he get on you?
You know, and see, I love competition. So when I see that, please, you know, that was fun for me. That I want to go at you, and I want you to go at me, and that's the way I grew up playing. So when I came to Chicago, I understood the aura of Michael, and we had played against his teams when I was in Milwaukee. So the aura of Michael, in as far as like offensive, when Tiger Woods comes to the golf course, everybody is cringing. So when Michael would walk in practice, some people would maybe tie their shoes a little bit tighter, but for me, it was just coming to practice against the best player. And, you know, I wanted that because I knew we would win the championship once we got to play together.
We're talking to Craig Hodges, one of the best shooters I've ever seen in my life. This is ESPN Los Angeles, 710. Craig, you're a perfect person to ask because you've known Tex for a long time. And as you mentioned, Tex passed away. But I always thought that Phil and Tex never got enough credit. And here's what I mean by that. I know Phil won 11 titles, but Phil won one NBA Coach of the Year award. One. In 20 years, he had 20 winning seasons and was recognized once for being the best coach. And I also think that his coaching tree should be bigger. There's a lot of guys that I think should have been head coaches or being given more of an opportunity. We know we got Steve Kerr and Luke Walton there now, but that's it. Do you agree with me? And if so, why do you think that is? Why do you think Phil only won one Coach of the Year award and has a small coaching tree?
This is what's happening, man. When you win the way that Phil and Tex won, you have haters throughout the league, who rather play analytical basketball and lose than to bring in somebody like Brian Shaw, like when he was in Denver, bring him in and let him bring in the triangle. But no. Ownership and general managers want to say, oh, well, that's an obsolete system. Okay, you can't teach what you don't know. So half of these guys don't know a basketball from their behind. So when I look at that, man, it's crazy when I look at probably 8 or 9 teams that are right there ready to get over a hump. If they were in triangle, it would be crazy, man. But you want to play analytics and positionless basketball, so be it. You're only going to have teams that have some semblance of a low post game on some level, whether it be driving or getting to the basket or posting somebody every now and then, they're gonna win, man.
But wouldn't you have thrived in this being the shooter that you were?
Oh my goodness!
Wouldn't you have killed it in this NBA,
man? Hodges, no. You're born too early, man. You're born. No, you need to be born 20 years later.
You know, I laugh about it. Me and myself, we talk about it. We're like, man, it's funny how you get to dribble around and call for picks on this side, dribble to the other side, call for a pick, and if you can dribble and shoot, man, you're gonna get at least 20 to 30 attempts, man. If you get hot, you can shoot as long as you want to. So it would be fun to play in, but for me, I wouldn't trade the time that I played anything on earth, man, because I got a chance to play against the golden age of the game. When you talk about the Kareems and Dr. J's, who set the era for the MJ, who set the era for Kobe. So, man, I'm blessed, man, to play when I did.
We're talking to Craig Hodges, who won the NBA three-point contest three times in 90, 91, and 92. When you see the game today, Craig, a lot of people talk about Clay, Michael's son, and Steph Curry as the best shooters the game has ever seen. Do you give them that? When you see them shoot, do you put them in that category with you and Larry Bird and Dale Ellis?
Once again, I say, you know, the game has progressed with the help of social media and just the ability to broadcast it to a larger amount of people. So I can see why people would say that, you know, but at the same time, I would love to see the physicality of what we had in the 80s and 90s when you're talking about going under the basket and coming off a single-double where you can hold somebody. So a lot of the freelance basketball that Steph and Clay are getting to run around with is a big difference, man. And there's no hating involved. You know, they shoot the ball at a high clip. But I threaten to say that, you know, you look at the amount of rips that they're getting at threes, you know, they would take the number of threes that we would get in a week's span with this shooting in one game, man. So it's a big difference in the way the game is played right now.
Craig, you have publicly taken issue with the use of the phrase "traveling cocaine circus." Describe why you're upset about it.
Well, you know, and my thing is that it's a diplomatic way of saying things. If you're not involved, if you want to make it as though, you know, it's something that you don't jive with, I think it was the way that MJ could have went about doing it, as opposed to this being the most, you know, people want to see this more than any documentary, possibly in the history of documentaries, and everyone's waiting to see it. And I'm sure guys that were on that first team with him who were called the traveling cocaine circus, I'm sure their family were waiting to watch it. And waiting to watch it on bated breath from the standpoint that my uncle, my granddad, my dad, somebody was on that squad with MJ, and they spoke of MJ in a high manner. And then this comes out, and he throws everybody under the bus to the point of saying that when I walk into the room, all my team is there. You got lines here. You got weed here. You got women there. And then you have a man at home having to explain which category were you in. And I don't think that's fair at this time in his life or the lives of the brothers that he played with for them to have to rehash something that probably was more enjoyable. Now that takes the glare off of their careers, man. That's not cool.
We're talking to Craig Hodges, who had a great career in the NBA, went on to coach in both the G League, was an assistant for the Lakers, and one of our shooting coaches for 6 or 7 years when Phil was there. And Craig, I'll end with this. Is shooting something that can be taught? In other words, you were a shooting coach. You can refine somebody's stroke and make them a more efficient player. But if a guy just can't flat shoot, can you teach somebody who doesn't have a jumper how to shoot in the NBA, or is that something that just can't be taught?
Check this out. When I was with the Lakers, y'all know the guy, Trevor Ariza.
Sure.
Trevor Ariza.
Broke his foot, and you taught him how to shoot.
When Trevor came to the Lakers, Trevor was a slash and burn guy. He's getting to the basket and getting to the basket. If he gets a jump, if he gets a look at a jump shot, he's trying to pump fake and get to the rack. That point when he was injured, he and I changed the whole mechanics of his thought on shooting the basketball to, you know, and I tell people, if you don't have a physical disability, I can show you how to shoot the basketball. Now, on the level that we're talking about, someone has to have some understanding of the game. So like Trevor, he understood the game. He understood the importance of having a jump shot to improve his ability to market his skills. And he was cool where we totally tore his shot down to the point where when the guys came back off the road and saw him shooting the ball, it was a total difference. Then when we got into the playoffs, Trevor would catch the ball at 3-point line and people in the stands were standing up hollering three. Something that when he got to us, he did not even think about shooting a three. So it can be tough, man.
Hey, man, it's great to talk to you, and I'm glad you're happy and healthy, and please stay safe, and all the best to you and your family.
Thanks, Craig.
Same to you guys, and bless your listeners, man. Everybody be safe and drink plenty of water. Peace.
All right. Thanks, Craig. See ya.
Plenty of water.
Yeah, I forgot about that Ariza broke his foot. And
yep.
And him and Hodges were in the gym every single day. And Ariza didn't shoot threes. You know, there's a couple other guys Brooke Lopez was like that. Never shot threes. I think the first 7 years in the NBA, he attempted one
Marc
three.
Marc Gasol was like that.
Yeah, and I think last couple of years, Brooke was averaging 300 to 400 threes a year.
Yeah, crazy. Crazy. Game changed, and they changed with it.
Yep.
Got no choice. All right, coming up next, we've got that Peter King sound. Which was with Mike Tirico a little bit earlier about the NFL. And we've also got Charles Barkley on what he thinks should happen with the rest of this NBA season.
And,
and
we say, hail fellow well met to a guy that we're going to miss. We'll get that too.
Legend. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Hey, 710 ESPN, Mason in Ireland. I thought we were going to do everybody put their own playlist in. When are we doing that?
Analytics sheet for that. I need some.
Yeah, we're getting ready for our big draft tomorrow, all-time Dodger teams. And I've got an analytical spreadsheet that's running right now. I'm hoping.
Lindsay, did you tell Sedano we're going to do it? He wanted to do it, or Mason wanted to do it on our show, but I think we should do it on Sedano's show. Did you tell him?
Yes, let's see. He said we could do it either 11:15.
Yeah, 11:15
or 11:30.
Yeah, let's do 11:15 tomorrow.
11:15. Okay, that's it. Happening tomorrow. I feel really good about this. This is one where, you know, I was not expected to win NBA 2K. I might be expected to win MLB.
Yeah, I think you are. I think I would be the underdog in this one, being it's a baseball game.
This is one where I've got to win for the sake of pride.
I have some excellent sleepers that you'll never see coming. Yeah,
I'll never give me one. Tell me one sleeper.
Okay, so you're doing it on like whatever their best year was.
Best
right?
year, correct?
Okay, so. Their bet, like one, if I only need one good year.
Yep.
Take a look at Paul Laduca.
Paul Laduca. Nice. He's on my list.
If you only need one good year.
Yeah, if I don't get Piazza, Paul Laduca is my second choice. I will tell you that much. All right, so that's a good sleeper. Good sleeper. All right, so a little bit earlier we were talking about Peter King from SI had a conversation. By the way, that isn't that great? The Michael Jordan still won't talk to SI all these years later.
Love it. Yeah.
They put him on the cover about 3 feet away from missing a breaking ball and said an embarrassment to baseball and to this day will not speak to SI. Peter King from SI had a conversation with Dr. Anthony Fauci on Sunday night and then talked to Mike Tirico about it today. Let's give that a listen.
An NFL general manager texted me over the weekend and basically talked about the lengths to which they are going to be going to sanitize and keep their facility basically hygienically pristine. And I told him about my conversation with Fauci. And I basically said, listen, I don't think people have an idea of what is at stake right now. Because as Fauci said, and I'm sure that the NFL is going to agree to this, if four players test positive on a Saturday night, you know, that team is not going to be able to play the next day. I mean, you know, they're going to have to call the game off because how would you like to be a player on the other team knowing that, okay, four tested positive today, but there's a very good chance that it isn't only four that will test positive tomorrow or the next day. And so I think that's one of the things I learned from him. And the other thing is that he said, listen, we are going to have to let the virus make a lot of these decisions. And what he means by that is, you know, you got to be dictated to by the virus. If the second wave of this virus, as he and other epidemiologists, scientists have predicted, is coming in the fall or winter, it'd be very easy if the infections in New York, New Jersey, and Illinois and wherever there are NFL franchises are way, way down or maybe even down to practically zero. It'd be very easy to say, that's great. It's over. But there almost certainly will be a second wave of this in the late fall. So people can't get too comfortable, even if, say, they're starting to let 20 or 30,000 people in stadiums at games.
Okay, so this ties into what Charles Barkley and Shaq were saying.
Yeah.
They were both saying earlier, as a matter of fact, we have Barkley, right?
Yeah, we have Barkley.
This is what Charles Barkley has been saying. He thinks that the NBA should pull the plug right now. I'm not so sure he's right, but here's what Charles says.
It's too dangerous. It's not safe. I don't know how they can make it safe. You know, everybody's talking about putting them in a bubble in Vegas and in Florida. But you can't put the hotel workers in a bubble. You can't keep people who work room service in a bubble and people who work in the hotel. And I'm not sure players want to stay in a hotel for two straight months because you can't leave the hotel to go out and get something to eat. You got to worry about the virus. So I said that I think it was 3 weeks ago they should cancel the season.
Okay, so put those two quotes together.
Yep.
Peter King says this thing is most likely coming back in the fall, and that's after he had a conversation with Anthony Fauci.
Yep.
So all those concerns that Charles has, which are completely valid concerns, would be there if they started.
Yeah, they're
next
not going
season.
Away.
So we've got to be, like he said, you can't put hotel workers in a bubble. But what you can do is change the way hotel workers, I mean, we've got to get some of these hotels open. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry. What you can do is, like, let's say you do order room service. Well, you have the cooks prepare the food with masks and gloves, and you have the people that deliver it, leave it outside your door, and knock on your door, and so there's no contact.
There's contactless delivery.
And you just do the best you can. Is it going to be perfect? No. But we can't let perfect be the enemy of good, Mace. There's got to be ways that we can reopen the country in some small ways. You and I were talking last week about some of these places. Like, you've been to Costa Rica, right?
Yes.
Okay. 95% of Costa Rica's, you know, GNP is like tourism, right? Tourism is huge there.
It's their number one source.
I didn't say that right. It's not the GNP, but it's like their number one source of outside revenue is people coming to the resorts. And so we've got to find a way for people to feel comfortable going down there again. Hawaii, where you and I both love to go. You know, we got to get Hawaii open or else a lot of these resorts are just going to wither away. And so we got to be willing to try some things. It may not be perfect.
Right.
But let's do the best we can. And take some risk and just follow the lead from the doctors.
Yep.
That's what I want to do. I don't want, you know, anybody can have an opinion. Don't start the league. Shut it down. That's why I've been so impressed with Adam Silver. Every time he talks on this, it's like he's running it through doctors, which is really
smart. He's not. And he's the one guy who hasn't released. Like we've heard the NFL's plan, which is we're full steam ahead without fans in the fall. That's the NFL's plan. We've heard MLB's
may not work,
plan,
but that's their plan for now.
Yeah, MLB's plan. Spring training 2.0 in June. Season starts in July. 82-game season. We've heard their plan. We haven't heard. The NBA has been very cagey. They've not announced anything that they're conceivably looking at right now. And the fact is they've got so many options on the table, they're not going to discuss any of them.
Right, and that's okay, too. But I'm not where Shaq and Charles are on this. I'm like, okay, the English Premier League, the EPL, got word today they can start up without fans in stadiums June 1st. That's in 19 days.
Yep.
You know, let's see how that goes. Let's see what the after effects are of this UFC event. And Mace, this is the thing I can't preach enough. Sports is entertainment. It exists to be broadcast on television. The fact that there aren't fans there sucks, but it's not the end of the world. That UFC event, Lindsay said it earlier, she watched it over the weekend, and she actually enjoyed it more because she could hear everything going on in the ring.
Right, right.
We can make these baseball games that they're broadcasting from Korea. If we get baseball back with no fans, it's a TV entertainment product. I mean,
yes, it is.
When's the last time you went to a high school baseball game? There's no fans at those games. It's pretty much for parents.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I'm kind of supportive of these sports trying to find their way back. I think it can work.
Yeah, me too. Me too. All right, so we had a passing over the Hail Fellow Well Met.
Let's do that when we come back.
Yeah, Hail Fellow Well Met, and one of the incredibly funny guys out there, and a great moment from his career coming up next. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, 710 ESPN, Mason and Ireland, what is going on? Tomorrow, by the way, on the Sedano Show, we will have our all-time Dodger team draft. We're going to be playing me versus Ireland versus Sedano in MLB The Show. We did this with NBA 2K a couple of weeks ago, and I'm sorting through it. Like, I just happened to notice, Tim Wallach never had a good year for the Dodgers, ever.
Really?
Tim Wallach, cross off your list of potential third baseman.
Okay.
Just doing that to help you out, John.
No, I he's not on my list of third basemen.
Okay,
maybe you're just tricking him.
Maybe I am just tricking you. That's absolutely a possibility. All right, so we had a passing over the weekend, an unbelievably funny guy.
So if you watch Seinfeld, which could be the greatest comedy of all time, I think Curb Your Enthusiasm is Seinfeld on steroids. But Larry David, the star of Curb, was one of the creators of Seinfeld, and he used to play the voice of George Steinbrenner. They had a guy that, you know, George worked for the Yankees, George Costanza, and George Steinbrenner. So there was a story once where George left his car in his parking space at Yankee Stadium, but he was off screwing around, and so Steinbrenner thought that George had died. Nobody could find him. So George Steinbrenner went to the parents of George Costanza to tell them that their son had died. Now, George's parents were played. They were brilliant, but the guy who played his dad was Jerry Stiller, Stiller's dad, who was in his 90s, but he passed away today, this morning. And he was such a great character, Frank Costanza, George's dad. So what you'll hear here is Estelle was the name of George's mom.
Yes.
And Frank was the name of his dad. George Steinbrenner goes over to their house to tell them that George Costanza has died. His mom is forlorn. And you'll hear what Jerry Stiller, as Frank Costanza, says to Steinbrenner. Hit it, Funch.
My name is George Steinbrenner. I'm afraid I have some very sad news about your son.
I can't believe it. He was so young. How could this have happened?
Well, he'd been logging some pretty heavy hours. First one in the morning, last one to leave at night. That kid was a human dynamo.
Are you sure you're talking about George?
You are, Mr. and Mrs. Costanza.
What the hell did you trade Jay Buhner for? He had 30 home runs and over 100 RBIs last year. He's got a rocket for an arm. You don't know what the hell you're doing.
Well, Buhner was a good prospect, no question about it. But my baseball people love Ken Phelps' bat. They kept saying, Ken Phelps, Ken Phelps.
Now you leave a message. Jerry, it's Frank Costanza. Mr. Steinbrenner's here. George is dead. Call me back.
Do you remember some of the inventions he came up with?
Oh,
the bra for men.
Or
the man's ear.
The man's ear, that's right.
Or the bro. Remember he had the trench coats? He invented a holiday. Festivus.
Festivus for the rest of us.
Festivus for the rest of us. Great character. He went on to be on King of Queens after that.
Yep.
And hail fellow well met.
Hail fellow well met. Yeah, and by the way, his wife, unbelievably funny too, Ann Mira.
Is she still with us?
I don't know if Ann Mira is still with us.
And then Ben, their son, is, you know, bordering on a comedy genius. So they left us in good
hands. Ann Mira is not with us any longer. She passed away in 2015.
Okay.
But they were a funny comedy team, too, Stiller and Mira.
Right. And, if you look at the stuff Ben has turned out, whether it be Zoolander or Meet the Parents or Something About Mary or, you know, he's been, we did the big, you weren't here, but on Friday we did a big thing on Tropic Thunder. If you've never seen Tropic Thunder.
Tropic Thunder is so funny.
It's going to offend some people. And that's what's one of the things we talked about, but it is
and
very,
it's getting more offensive
funny.
Over time.
Right. Yeah. And but
offensiver
still.
And offensiver.
Yeah. And but Ben Stiller is underrated as a comedic actor. That's for sure.
No question. All right. Coming up next for you. If there were 30 seconds to describe the entire documentary, The Last Dance, we have found them, and we will play them for you next. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. It is all happening, people. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. By the way, tomorrow on the show, I'm very excited about this. Everybody has heard about the murder hornets that are a scourge now. They are flying in from, I think, Japan, right? And they're in the state of Washington so far. They're these large sort of, they look like gigantic, they look like birds. But they're actually hornets, and they apparently have just an unbelievably nasty sting. And we've got an ornithologist or an entomologist, one of those, a bee expert. I think it's an entomologist or an ornithologist?
I have no idea if either one of those are actual words.
He's entomologist
a professor of entomology and the honeybee program director at the University of Georgia.
Yeah, so we'll get the latest on the murder hornet and when we can expect it to arrive here in L.A. Are you nervous about it, John?
Zero. I have zero nerves about the murder hornets.
Yeah, it's just a rough year. It's just a rough year. And you throw the murder hornets.
If we did a reset on 2020, I don't think anybody would argue.
Oh, God, what a year. All right, so it's funny. We were all watching Last Dance last night. And at the end of episode 7, I texted Lindsay and Michael and said, Michael Funches, and said, pull the last 30 seconds of episode 7. And I get up this morning, there's an email from John. It says, pull the last 30 seconds of episode 7. We were completely unanimous that the last 30 seconds of episode 7 are probably ultimately the takeaway from the entire documentary miniseries, The Last Dance. Funch, play that.
When people see this, they're going to say, well, he wasn't really a nice guy. He may have been a tyrant. Oh, well, that's you, because you never won anything. I wanted to win, but I wanted them to win and be a part of that as well. Look, I don't have to do this. I'm only doing it because it is who I am. That's how I played the game. That was my mentality. If you don't want to play that way, don't play that way. Break.
Break.
And by the way, when he says break, he's calling for the director to break. He's basically saying cut.
Cut.
Exactly. His own director.
He's saying cut.
And you could tell he was starting to tear up.
Yes.
And that's what I mean by he just, you know, you hear people say all the time, well, that person just wanted it more. And a lot of people think that that's not true, that everybody desires it equally. No, there are people that are willing. You know, he said it earlier in the doc. Success has a price.
Yep.
Okay, and the price for him was he was not going to be able to live with himself if he lost. All right, he couldn't do. I mean, he couldn't function. If he wasn't the best he could possibly be, and the way he did that was he wanted to put people through fire. He said, I'm tough on them, that if they can get through me, then they can get through anything. And Kobe just took a page out of that book. And there are different ways to lead. You asked earlier, you know, I asked you if anybody today could get away with what Jordan did, punching Steve Kerr in the eye. And, you know, Kobe punched Samaki Walker back in the day. And you said, well, what about LeBron? Isn't LeBron tough? No, LeBron does not lead this way. LeBron leads in a kind of a kumbaya way and brings everybody along with him. And he's so freakishly talented that LeBron will, you know, basically, nobody's as good as he is, but he can make you better.
Yeah,
Jordan and Kobe were like, I'm going to play at this level, and you get up to my level or get the hell out of the way. LeBron's like, come along with me. And Michael used to say that Magic Johnson in his career was the greatest leader in the history of team sports. Magic was an assist guy. He was the best passer I ever saw. What LeBron doesn't get enough credit for is his assists. LeBron is one of the best three passers I've ever seen. And so now you're looking at Michael Jordan and Kobe. Nobody's ever going to talk about them being elite passers. They were both all defense multiple times.
Sure.
They were both two of the greatest scorers in the history of the world. But they were either get up here and ride with me or get out of the way. And people just, I think Jordan doesn't think people will understand that. That's why he says people are going to say he's a tyrant. He doesn't care if you think he's a tyrant. All that matters to him is that he wins.
Well, yeah, and I think that, you know, Bill Wennington at one point last night said, was he a bully? Yes. Was he an a-hole? Yes. But he got us to win.
Right.
And I think the end, Jordan would say the end justified the means.
Right, he was 6-0 in the NBA Finals, which is something no one else can say. Every bit. Magic was 5-4 in the NBA Finals. Kobe was 5-2. It's just very few people. I don't think Bill Russell lost in the finals, but very few people have an undefeated
record.
Have a spotless record in the finals.
It's interesting talking to Craig Hodges a little bit earlier today. If you missed it, you can check out our podcast, who was a teammate of Jordan's and was part of two championship teams in the Jordan era. Talked about the fact that he liked it. He thought that was the way Jordan pushed everybody was the right way to go about things. And his basic attitude was two words, bring it. I mean, he wanted there to be a fight in those practices. Not a fight, but he wanted there to be fight.
Yeah, we haven't gotten to this yet. Do you think Scottie Pippen is coming off good in this doc?
You know, he's such a likable guy. That's the thing about him. He's such a likable guy. But, boy, last night's episode was pretty devastating, I think. The fact that he would not go into that game when Phil called the play for Tony Kukoc, and Tony Kukoc drained it for the win against the Knicks. A series they actually ended up losing, I think, in seven. But afterwards, Bill Cartwright, they all talked about the speech that Bill Cartwright gave essentially to the team and to Scottie Pippen about, I can't believe you gave up on us. I can't believe you gave up on us. It's a really tough moment for Pippen. And I guess I'd forgotten what that moment was. I remember, you know, Scottie Pippen wouldn't go into a game. But this kind of took us inside that moment. I will say that I think the likability of Scottie Pippen kind of carries him through that. I think you would say, and I think a lot of guys there would say, that didn't define Scottie Pippen. And, I mean, Scottie Pippen was a
although I don't think people
player.
Have ever forgotten it.
No, but would you say it defined him?
I would say, like you guys, you and Lindsay are both from Ohio. Woody Hayes is a legendary coach at Ohio State. Absolutely legendary. Yep. I don't know if you can write the story of Woody Hayes without mentioning him punching that kid in the neck in the first three paragraphs. It's probably not fair, but it is what people remember him for.
Yeah, I was going to say it's like A1 and A2 as far as like the top things people will remember or say about him as soon as you say their name.
And here's the truth about Scottie Pippen. I think Scottie was one of the most underrated players of his era.
Yes.
I think he was elite defensively. He was a Swiss Army knife, great passer, great scorer. When Jordan left for those 2 years, they still won 50 games when he left.
Yeah, no, they had a great year.
Because Scottie was the leader of those teams. I think you can make an argument he's one of the 50 greatest players of all time. And I'll tell you, Mace, where I thought he made a huge mistake last night. Huge mistake. And again, I'm saying this as a Scottie Pippen defender and a guy who thinks the world of his game. I can't believe when they asked him if he had a chance to do it over
again. He said he would do it again.
He said he would do it again. I think that makes him come off incredibly tone deaf. Because to me, if you gave me, I don't know what the worst day of my life is, but if you gave me, or if my career is, a chance to do it over again, I would not say I would do it exactly the same way.
Yeah, I mean, there's a level of defiance there.
And it's just right there for him. It's you know, if you had that to do over again, oh, of course, I wouldn't have handled it that way. Looking back on it, and Isaiah Thomas did the same thing earlier in the doc. They said, if you had a chance to do it over again, would you have walked off? Yeah, because that's who we were. We were the bad boys. Okay, go ahead. Live with your legacy then.
Yeah, I would say that
we're giving you a mulligan and neither one of you guys are taking it.
This documentary has dredged up some history. And I think to the disadvantage of both Isaiah Thomas and Scottie Pippen, to the advantage of guys like Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr comes off great. That story last night about standing up to Michael Jordan, Steve Kerr comes off fantastic in this documentary, and there are a lot of people that do. But Scottie Pippen and Isaiah Thomas both, the documentary has dredged up some terrible aspects of their career. Now, I do think Isaiah came off as smug and defiant and what's the word I'm looking for? He came off the worst. Scottie Pippen's a likable guy. So I think he coasts a little bit. And they're both in the 50 greatest players of all time. Scottie Pippen, I think, ranks higher than Isaiah Thomas does. But because Scottie is such a likable guy, I think he coasts through it a little bit more than Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas is still going to come down as the villain of The Last Dance. Well, Isaiah Thomas and Jerry Krause are the two villains of
right.
The
and
Last
in
Dance.
In Jerry Krause's case, it actually helps him that he died, because then people kind of tend to cut him a break because he's just a bad guy.
Although he could have mea culpa'd himself. He could have said, you know what, I was wrong all those years.
Who?
Jerry Krause.
Well, how? He's dead.
No, I'm saying if he was alive, he could have said, yeah, right. I was wrong all those years.
Yeah, I don't think
that's what Jay Williams says he would have done.
I think Jay's wrong. Everybody I know who knew, you know, I knew a bunch of guys that came from that Bulls organization.
So you don't think even now he would have said,
no,
I screwed that up?
No, he thinks, matter of fact, like, did you see how the episode 7 opened last night when Craig Sager said, are you surprised
with all the backstabbing and
with all yeah. the backstabbing going? And then Krause just basically he pulled what the president does these days. He just attacked the reporter.
Right.
Which was Craig Sager. And both those guys are not around anymore. But, you know, and that you would ask a question like that, that your characterization is false. No, it wasn't false. They all hated him. It's all on video.
Right.
You embarrassed Phil Jackson and told him that even if he went 82-0, you weren't going to bring him back. How is that not a back? I mean, come on.
Thanks a lot, Craig.
Right. Yeah, all the brother
thanks a lot, Craig. Exactly.
You were mad at Craig Sager because Krause stormed out.
All right. Coming up next for you is 5 o'clock Fast Track, Mason, Ireland, 710 ESPN.